Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
Well, here we are, and it is February 26, 2019, episode 74. Can you imagine that?
I know, 74, it just flew by.
74, it's just been flying by. I'm Steve Johan, and you're listening to another episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Our great humble host, Brady Wright, is actually off to the vet with his dog. He's got some problems with the doggy, and you know, when dogs become your child,
yep,
you take care of them. And of course, across the way from me, not too far, I could actually do a knuckle bump with Shane Osborne, who is our expert metal crafter, and of course myself, as I said, Steve Johan, the El Camino man. We normally start out with things back to the blacktop, and this week, in the latest happenings in the world of automotive.
The world of automotive?
The automotive world?
Yeah, well, I had a first-timer this week.
Tell me about it.
Got our first barn find. I had a gentleman come in and say they were tearing down this house.
Okay.
And to build new condos. And they started to dig the garage out that had collapsed, and we found a 1949 Studebaker in the garage, which we happened to purchase from the construction company.
Now, how did you know the construction? How did they know to come to you?
Just word around the neighborhood, you know. You got an old car, come to us.
Wow. Yeah,
so we just purchased a 1949 Studebaker.
I'll bet you probably got a pretty good deal.
Completely rust-free.
No kidding.
This car's been in this garage its whole life that collapsed around it. I mean, it was completely, nobody knew the car was there.
Wow.
I guess the gentleman that owned the house had passed away. And
so is it so old you don't have to worry about the title?
Yeah, what we'll do is we'll send a registered letter to the house. And the house, which is no longer that address, no longer exists, will come right back. And then we can go ahead and get a title.
Wow. And how close is this vehicle?
It's at our shop now.
But, I mean, how far away was it from?
It was just right down the street, actually, about four blocks.
Oh, my gosh, that's great.
But yeah, so it's actually my first real barn find.
Yes.
I dust the dust off today. I got a pile of it.
Oh, my gosh. It has
fill our cans.
The whole running gear and everything all still sitting in there?
It's all still in there. I mean, the car was registered in 95.
Okay.
It was last on the road, but it's absolutely gorgeous, completely straight.
Oh, wow.
So we're going to...
You're going to
dust it off and
see what you can do with it?
See what we can do with it.
Is it flip or polish and finesse?
I don't know. We haven't decided
yet. Depends on how much you paid for it and what it's worth for you guys.
Exactly.
You're going to get on out there and say, does it fire up? Do we need to do anything? And what will it cost? And then go, what's the going price for a 49 Studebaker, right?
49 Studebaker.
Is it any kind of special model or is it just...
It's the Commander, I believe, what it's called.
Two-speed, three-speed automatic?
Three-speed on the tree, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool.
It's got a flathead six-cylinder in it. And
yeah. That is cool. That is really cool. Well, we want to hear more about those kind of things in the future. You know, we got a lot of old buildings in this area.
I'll put a picture up on the website.
Very good. Get it on the Facebook page so everybody can take a look at it. Well, with all the news in the American automakers dropping sedans from their lineup, code word for economical four-cylinder cars, it got me to thinking. As longtime fan of European crime dramas, thanks to first PBS, I started watching them there, and then Netflix, I love watching all these European crime dramas. And the interesting thing is a lot of them have subtitles and stuff. So the latest one I'm watching is from Finland. And what I find is they're driving around in Finland, and there's snow on the ground, much like what we had. But are they driving around in SUVs and all that kind of stuff? Nope, they're just driving around in front-wheel little sedans.
Oh, yeah, front-wheel sedans do killer in the ice and snow.
And I started thinking all of Europe, Asia, Australia, much of the world runs around in small four-cylinder sedans.
Yep.
There is a huge market for that. That's why the Japanese automakers will continue to do well and prosper, as well as Asian auto manufacturers. And the big three, since they cater to Americans and Canadians, who tend to like, and mostly Americans, big, huge, gargantuous vehicles with V8s and bigger, because our government and military keep the cheap oil coming. I'm not for that, but that's just the facts of life. So therefore, the benefits is everything, the big three is shutting down on everything except for their muscle cars, which is quote-unquote sedans. And other than that, it's all big SUVs and trucks. And I thought, you know,
well, it's a rough country, you know. You gotta get around.
Oh, yeah, right. Uh-huh. And then you look at the European Swiss Alps and all that, and they're still cruising around in those little cars. So they've got really good plows, and they're set up completely different than we are over here.
We like our luxury.
We do. We like our big cars, big trucks, big everything. And when they say Texas is big, well, no, everybody else likes theirs big too. So,
yep.
Now, speaking of economical, Audi is adding four new battery-operated cars in its lineup in 2020, both sedan and SUV classes. So it'll be interesting to see, because we've talked a lot about on the show over the year and a half we've been on the air about how many companies are putting hundreds of millions of dollars into battery technology. And my feeling is it's still a very, very long way off. And since Brady's not here, I can bring up the T word. T is still on the precipice of whether or not they're going to stay in the future. They had two, that's Tesla for those who don't know.
Yeah, it's been a while since we heard them.
Yes, yes it is.
You could talk about it once in a while.
So anyway, their chairman founder is almost pretty much going to be stepping away from the company here very shortly because of all the things that have been going on. But nonetheless, they've had two good profitable quarters, and maybe that has something to do with them getting their production line set up so they can produce more cars and meet the demand. Oh, but the bottom line is the other thing that's going to hit the battery-powered cars is the government will, after they hit, well, I think it's 250,000 or whatever it is, there's a certain magic number that when they hit that number, they don't get any more subsidies, i.e. buyers don't get to knock $7,500 off the price of their car and write it off on their tax. Well, then all of a sudden we'll see how popular electric cars are.
Yeah.
It just, you know, it is what it is. And then Ford is under the microscope, microscope, in the midst of a self-imposed investigation of its fuel economy and testing procedures that may have produced incorrect mileage and emissions data for some of its fleet. Ford has announced that it has been in a query of their own since last fall, since several employees voiced concerns about the process and resulting data of how well their true economy mileage numbers turn out. And the automaker is quick to point out that this is potential problem does not involve cheat devices like those used by VW and its subsidiaries. So, in other words, they've caught it ahead of time. They want to fix it, and good on them. I hope they do. And then what I wanted to see here on a really cool positive up note, SEMA,
yeah,
is putting together what they call a nationwide search for aspiring up-and-coming young vehicle builders. It kicks off March 16th, 2019. It's called Young Guns Regional Program. Takes place at the TXT2K19 at Houston Raceway Park, just outside of Houston. It will feature 10 builders age 27 or younger competing for a chance to participate in the 2019 Battle of the Builders competition at the Big Vegas Show. And I was thinking, maybe just by some slight chance, Noah still has that 89 Crown Vic. Maybe he and his brother Nathaniel could go to town with a little bit of help of E Company Customs and try to do something of their own. But we'll think about that, discuss it maybe later on the show. We've got a really cool guest coming up, a return of Eric LeMay, and a whole lot more. So stick with us. We'll be right by. Put it in gear, and we'll take it out of gear and put it in park, because we got a lot more there for you.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Okay, forest animals, kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay, squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
Hey, car enthusiast, are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
Welcome back to the second segment of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. It's time for the windshield view, and this week we have Eric LeMay with us. How you doing, Eric?
Good, Chad. How are you doing?
Oh, not too bad. It's a little chilly out here, but we're hanging in there.
Well, you don't even have a winter jacket on there, Shane.
That's
right here. Oh, okay. I didn't see that. Well, so, Eric, you're a return guest, and for those who do not know, you are related to the famous Mr. LeMay, who, where the LeMay Museums, there's two of them, got all their cars. But before we get into that, I thought we'd start out with, we brought you on specifically just to cover some upcoming events before we get more in the weeds with the museum and various things like that. So why don't you tell everybody what's coming on down the pike and where it's going to be held and all that good stuff.
Well, there's a lot happening always at Marymount. The LeMay Family Collections at Marymount. It's basically about as close as you can go to seeing Harold LeMay's collection from when he was alive. There's probably about 600 cars. It's on roughly 85, 88 acres. And it's very different from the America's Car Museum, LeMay America's Car Museum, in downtown Tacoma. Marymount is in Spanaway, Spanaway Parkland, so it's about 5 miles south. And part of that is, part of what makes it a great space is that it does a lot of incredible car shows and special events and other things. In fact, in April 27th and 28th, we do the LeMay Wine, Spirits, and Chocolate Show, which is actually kind of part a wine trade show and, well, wine and chocolate show, but also it's within the museum at Marymount. And that's a two-day event. But the big thing we have coming up early in the summer is the LeMay Motorcycle Days. And our motorcycle days, it started out as a day, and the motorcycle day is now turned into pretty much a whole week. And this year it's June 13th to the 23rd. but it's got the it's got vintage motorcycle trials, and this is, I'd never seen this before it came to Marymount, but basically they go out in the woods and they run these time trials on vintage motorcycles, dirt bikes basically. And the property is big enough that it can just absorb, so there's like, I don't know how many hundreds of motorcycles show up for this thing, for these time trials. But that happens on June 15th, and then it kind of is centered around Father's Day on June 16th. So it's kind of turned into a Father's Day week thing. And one of the really fun things they do is it's a Seattle Cossack stunt team performs. And they're one of the oldest stunt performance teams in the country. They've been around since like 1938. And wow. They use basically stock Harleys from the 30s and 40s, and they ride them in formation. And they always have something up their sleeve. It's really fun because we have a big enough space that it's really easy to let them do their whole show. So you get the A show when you want to see the Cossacks at Marymount. And I guess two other big events that happen at Marymount are June 1st and 2nd. We do the our spring auction. We do a spring auction, and then we do an auction late in the summer, the last Saturday and Sunday of August, basically, which is the fall auction. And the spring auction is June 1st and 2nd this year. And there's usually about 200 cars in the auction, collector and other cars and other things. And I believe this is always on Indianapolis 500 day, if I'm correct. But June 9th this year, we do our valve cover races. And valve cover races, if you've never seen them, are really something to behold. And
they are.
Marymount gets really into valve cover races, and people are really serious about making their valve cover racers.
No, hold on there, because you got to explain what valve cover races is. This is like Pinewood Derby racing or something?
Exactly.
Yeah, basically. you take the valve cover off an engine, and you put wheels on it.
And you race them down a hill.
Yeah, and we run it. We created a whole track, and so Marymount has its own valve cover track, so it's a hill, so it's all gravity. And you run it down, and you have a camber there for photo finishes, and we put grandstands up, and you can either go for speed or you can go for design. Those are kind of like the two ways they've tended to go over the decade or so that we've done them. Some people are really into painting and decorating their valve covers. Others are there to win.
Is there any rules on size and all that? Like with the Pinewood Derbies, like with the Cub Scouts and other organizations for kids, you have a weight ratio. You have to use the kit. You can whittle things down, but you have to stay at a certain weight ratio. And then even with soapbox derby races where kids get together and stuff, again, you have weight restrictions so that people can't be dropping a piece of lead in the back of their vehicle in order to get that weight ratio in there to get that faster momentum. So now what about the valve cover races? Is there any kind of stipulations on actual size and any of that, or is it just kind of a no holds barred?
I believe, and I may be speaking out of turn here because
yes. Uh-oh. I think he just got a self.
Yeah, no, sorry about that.
Yep.
That's my timer for when I had to be ready for you to call.
Oh, there you go.
But to answer your question, I believe that there is like an actual national rule system set up for this? Like, I think it's actually kind of a bigger thing that if you were to look up valve cover racing, that there is a rule sheet that somebody has made out. Now, that said, I've gone to every valve cover race at Marymount, and I don't think anybody's ever sat and weighed a car.
Okay.
Like, if anybody sat around and talked about whether or not somebody was cheating at valve cover racing, it's the fun of just seeing how fast you can the top of an engine go down a slide.
It's a blast. It's comical.
Oh, you've been to these things, Shane?
I've built a couple.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's kind of like an adult kid thing. So you can be a kid all over again, but you're an adult.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's grown-up Pinewood Derby without all the parents hovering over you.
That's right. Okay.
Aluminum ones work really well.
Oh, okay. I'll remember that.
Shane's got it down.
You mean you couldn't take the valve cover off that flathead 6?
That actually probably worked pretty good.
That'd be nice and heavy. That'd be really heavy.
Heavy is good, actually.
It is.
But
so
anyway.
So then, now what about actual, do you have car shows down there? Do you host any car shows where people just bring and hang out and do their car shows down there?
Yeah, our annual show was always the last Saturday of August. That's our big in-house show. And at that show.
Whoa, hang on. We got more of the show coming right up, and I was sitting there looking at you, Shane. I was not paying attention. So hang on. We'll be right back with more of the show and Eric LeMay.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
More horsepower, chrome, and rust after these messages.
Attention men under the age of 35. You know what really impresses the ladies? When a guy has a few drinks and later gets pulled over for buzz driving. That could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Oh, I know. You drive more carefully when you're buzzed. You've proven that hundreds of times. A woman admires that kind of confidence. And you've practiced how to speak if a cop does pull you over. Slowly, clearly, and politely, like, "Good evening, officer." And what woman doesn't find it adorable that you call it buzzed even though the law calls it drunk? You could kiss $10,000 goodbye, along with any chance of having a girlfriend.
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving.
Hello, this is Zach with Cascade Campers. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I'm jumping in with my clothes on!
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Back in Vehicle City.
Yes, back in Vehicle City. You are with us at Horsepower Chrome and Rust. I'm Steve Johann, your co-host with Brady Wright not being here, and Shane Osborne, co-pilot today, Wright and Shotgun. And we've got a great guest on tonight. It's Eric LeMay. He's been running through all the different events going on at LeMay America's Car Museum, but it's not America's Car Museum. It is actually the Harold LeMay Original Car Collection located at the Marymount location at the Spanaway. And I tell you what, I am always a little bit confused. I know I've been to both locations a couple times each. But I always get confused because they both have that LeMay and they have museum, and they're both in the same very, very close vicinity. When a person comes to town, I think most people are thinking they're going to go to America's Car Museum because that's right there next to the Tacoma Dome.
Can't miss it.
You can't miss it. And it's a beautiful, monstrously, I think, two or three or four stories big. And where you are located is out in an old armory. It's actually a convent. A convent.
It's a boys' school and convent.
That's right. And we're talking over 100 years old. And the interesting thing is it's still the original building. I mean, they've upgraded, of course, to be able to do different things on the inside and stuff. But it's got that old, it's got the old building. And what they also have is a bunch of just sheds and buildings on the outside. Everything from steel frame buildings to other kind of buildings with all of Harold's collection just sitting there. And some of them are collecting dust. Other have got it all dusted off in really nice shape. And I was going to ask you, do you you said there's a 200-car auction that comes on, and that money, I take it, is used in part for supporting the museum there. Do those cars come out of the actual collection, or do other people donate them? How does that work?
It's a combination.
Okay.
There's kind of three parts to the cars that come through. It's called Lucky Auctions, and there's three parts to it, and that is there are some cars that are from the collection, and if they're a car from the collection, it probably means that it was a double or it was something that didn't make sense in the storytelling from a museum standpoint for the foundation. And so some years there's been a lot of those cars, you know, like when Grandpa died. I mean, one thing that always amazed everybody is he had something like 108 1941 Chevrolets. He had every 41 Chevy, every 41 Chevy you could imagine he had. And you can't just all of a sudden put a hunt, you know, you only need, what, maybe five or six of them to tell a story?
Yep.
So, but you can't put 100 of them up at auction at one time. So, you know, I don't think there's any of those 41 Chevys left. But it's kind of, we had to, over the last 20 years, figure out how to sell those one at a time. So that's kind of the first way that cars come to the Lucky Auction. The second way is people that donate cars that don't fit into the collection, but they know that the money is going to a good cause. So it's just straight donation, and basically the foundation works with Lucky Auctions to turn it into a flip for the most part and take money that helps fund the operations and the educational things that the museum does year-round. And the third type of car is just people that have it on consignment. I mean, it's just like you or me. I've sold cars there where, you know, I put them on consignment and just ran them through. And, you know, it's kind of the same as every other auction you'd see in Scottsdale or anyplace else, is that, you know, you just need two people who want to pay a dollar more than the next guy for your car.
Very good. Okay, because that clarified it, because – you know, you think about an individual who makes all this money and decides, I'm going to keep buying. I really like a 40 Chevy. For whatever reason, I'm really set on it. It'd be like me. I want to get 68 Chevrolets. And, of course, I've got to have an El Camino. I've got to have a Chevelle. I've got to have a Chevelle Super Sport.
Right.
Chevelle Super Sport convertible. I have to have an Impala. I have to have everything that came out in 68. Well, now I'm talking 15, 20 cars. And trucks included there. And then after that, it's just like, okay, why not go on to the Dodges? Why not go on to the, you know? But apparently your grandfather just had a collector bug in him, and maybe like coin collectors just fell in love with certain years and decided it was worth purchasing. And so that kind of segues in another thing. It would seem to me with all these cars that maybe people who know about you have tapped you over the years to use some of these cars in as props for movies or TV shows. Has that ever come about?
Yeah, it's come about with mixed results. One of my favorite things when I was a kid, because first of all, we have tended to say no when people approach us for using cars in movies and TV shows, because then they're treated like props, and it becomes an insurance thing, and it becomes how they're treated on set that that the cars, we just kind of got a little bit of a feeling like you shouldn't be treating museum pieces that are in the public trust like studio props. But all that said, one of the most exciting things I ever did as a kid was I took a week when they were filming the story of Jackie Onassis Kennedy, and they shot most of it in Edmonds and some of it at Boeing Field. And this is like 1983, maybe 82, 83, something like that. And I absolutely fell in love with Jacqueline Smith because we were taking cars every day. We'd take truckloads of cars. We'd drive cars. We did all the cars for that movie. And Jacqueline Smith had just come off of Charlie's Angels. And so I had a crush on her. I was 13. I was the perfect age just to want to follow Jacqueline Smith everywhere she walked for 2 weeks. I wanted to be like three paces behind and just follow her every place or talk to her. And that was how I spent 2 weeks of my summer when I was like 13 years old. You know, and nobody knew that I wasn't 16. So I got to drive the cars around when they were setting stuff up. And I still, to this day, I'll walk through either museum, and I can tell you the cars we took that were in that movie. And it was a made-for-TV movie. And it was starring Jacqueline Smith. And I forget, all the women were really into the guy that played Jack Kennedy. I didn't care about any of that. I had Charlie's Angel.
Of course not.
She knew my name.
Well, you know what's interesting is it would seem to me that makes total sense that when you're going to do a period type TV show or movie, and what you tend to do is you block out a block, you know, a little corner or a little area where you're going to have everything blocked out in your film, and where you're going to do the filming, and therefore you need all the cars and vehicles all period right for that, and then you shoot your shots, and then you go somewhere else and you do some more shots and do the same thing, and you want a number of different cars so it doesn't look like, hey, there's that red, you know, like
yep.
You know, you could see some TV shows where they use the same reel again and again and again. But that's how they're done, and it would make sense that they would use you or a museum of any type with cars in it to do that with. So
and they do it, and we have cars that are famous, like at Marymount we have Happy Days DeSoto. And it's only seen for a couple of brief moments in the early Happy Days, but then it's like you can see it every time it pulls into the driveway. It's being a Happy Days.
Yep.
So that it's a 48 DeSoto station wagon. We have that. We have one of the jumper cars from Dukes of Hazzard. So we have a General Lee that is straight from Warner Brothers, and it was a jumping car. So, which is the funniest thing about it is that if you look in the mirror underneath, you can see the frame has just been bent. The car is practically destroyed. I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
Oh, no. We know that.
They absolutely killed this car, but they killed it over and over. And the way I understood it was there were like six of them, even though they went through something like, I don't know, how many dozens or 100 or whatever, there were certain ones that they kept investing money in because every time it jumped something or did something, they did the reinforcements, and they realized they had to have like a core set of stunt cars. And this is one of those stunt cars.
Cool.
And, you know, I don't know. There's some other, I mean, there's movie star cars, but that's different than
right. Right.
And there's cars owned by famous people that are different. But, you know, again, going back to my childhood, I'm the right age. That Happy Days DeSoto is just like, I think that's the neatest thing ever. Now, who knows about the Happy Days DeSoto anymore?
Well, it would be like Fonz's motorcycle being parked someplace and yep. that on display. Well, everybody know it.
I wonder about that. The Bullitt car, the Bullitt Mustang is at LeMay ACM right now until April, I think. April 24th,
oh, wow.
I believe. And so the Bullitt car is there, and it's got a whole long story, and it's mostly unrestored. It's kind of incredible to look at. But I don't relate to the Bullitt car. I saw Bullitt. I saw Steve McQueen buy it or drive it. I understand, though, that if you're about 15 years older, 10 years older than me, I suppose, the Bullitt car is like people go and they cry when they see it.
Well,
they
had a whole episode of NYPD Blue, or the one with Tom Selleck in it. What's that? Blue Bloods. And they had an episode, I think it was probably one of the season three or whatever it was. I've stopped watching it. And it was somebody supposedly had that car stashed away in their garage. And they're all like talking about it. And all the guys, everybody from the father down to the grandkids, are all like, no, wow. Oh, and so at the end, they're all standing by it. They're all just like high-fiving each other going, wow. Because everybody understands the significance of that car.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I'm not old enough.
Yeah. And,
but
and
I don't get it.
Would probably get into the kit
point.
With Kit.
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay, so which TV show had a really cool car that you would remember?
Munster.
Yeah.
That's even older, but that was on reruns. Like, if you grew up around here, Munsters was on at Channel 11 every day, and that's kind of what you watched after school. So it's really a funky thing when it comes to how museums and how collectors and how people think about movie and television cars and iconic cars.
Oh, yeah, Grandpa's coffin car. That was awesome.
Yeah. Well, and Granny, how about the truck that was used on the Beverly
the
Hillbillies? Yep. I mean, we all grew up with reruns. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, so we all grew up with those. And that is the power of certain vehicles. They take us back into pop culture, pop history. And you see that, and you're right. Each generation has a different, you know, my kids grew up watching Fast and Furious and things like that. So they're looking at those cars going, that's really cool. And me, I'd love to have seen the cars used in, Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry or the,
Jeep we just built. I mean, every time I walked in the shop, it took
MASH.
It took me right back to my childhood.
That's right. You're watching MASH with those guys driving around in that.
Every morning it was like going back into my childhood era.
Well, that's right.
That Jeep.
Well, and then you think about what MacGyver drove. He had a couple different vehicles. I think he had a Jeep for a while.
Yeah.
He had an old truck though. What was that truck that? Do you remember the truck that he got from his uncle or whatever? It was later on an old kind of a tan. Colored pickup truck, 40 something or other.
We at Marymount, we have one of the Magnum PI Ferraris.
Oh, that's right. There you go.
My wife, Pilar, she climbed into it and she took it out like into Spanaway. Like, you could not peel her away from the first like 2 hours that car appeared on the property because it was like the ultimate. Tom Selleck mobile to her.
Well, it is. And you know what? We're running out of time. And how do people find out more about you?
Go to www.LeMayMarymount.org. LeMay Marymount, one word. And all the schedule stuff is there. Everything's there. Look up LeMay Marymount.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Eric, for coming on again. We appreciate it, and you have a great night.
Thanks, guys.
Yep.
You too. Thank you.
Yes.
You bet. Well,
be right back with more Horsepower Chrome and Rust right after these messages.
Mm-hmm. Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life, young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Hey, car enthusiast, are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest-growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
This is Cody with Bow Wow Air-Cooled. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you.
When it comes to saving money, don't act like a baby.
Goo goo gaga.
Be the boss and make a budget.
I'm the boss, baby.
You're the boss of me.
I am the boss of you.
Are not.
M2.
Are not.
M2.
Need a little help?
Aren't you going to do any work?
I'm very busy delegating.
Create a personalized savings plan.
We can share.
You obviously didn't go to business school.
And get other tools and tips at feedthepig.org.
Welcome to the fourth segment of the show. This is Cars Confidential, where we share all kinds of hot rod stories. And this week, filling Brady's big clown floppy shoes, we have Steve.
Yes, and I thought this would be kind of an interesting story. It's going to be a little segue from what we normally do. But interestingly enough, it lines right up with what we were talking with our guest, because at the Marymount Museum, they have vintage motorcycle days. And I thought, I've got this great book. It's called... But it's put out by Gene Davison, Growing Up Harley Davisons, Memoirs of a Motorcycle Dynasty. And years ago, I did a show called The Hog Radio Show. And I interviewed Gene probably 2, 3, maybe 4 times over the 10 years of that show. And I got one. I got a couple of her books, and we talked to her about it and all that. And she's got a really good program called Yell and Tell. But I thought I'd share a story out of this book. I think you're going to really... really enjoy this. It's called The Honey Uncle to the Rescue. When orders for their motorcycles began coming their way, there was soon actual proceeds from the sales. Unaccustomed to having any extra money around, the boys didn't know what to do with the cash. They had no company bank account, so they employed an old canning jar as their bank. For want of a place to keep their bank, they hid it among the canned peaches and string beans in the Davison House family pantry. A story has been passed down in family that my great-grandfather, or grandmother, finally gave up in the battle to influence her sons to be cleaner and hired a maid to at least keep the house neat and tidy. It seemed this maid was doing a fine job and also seemed to be living quite well. One day, my grandmother noticed how many trips the maid had been making to the pantry. Sure enough, when someone went to check on the bank, the canning jar was empty. The maid had stolen all of the young company's earnings. After this incident, any extra money was deposited in a true bank. And Bessie, the youngest member of the Davison family, kept the company books. She had been watching the rest of her family become involved with their motorcycle business and wanted to help in whatever way she could. She was good with members and offered to keep all the financial records. She did this for many years, and in gratitude, her brothers later paid her for her college education. Like any young company, the boys were always in need of money, especially after the maid robbed the bank. Today, they would probably go to the real bank and take out a venture capital loan, but in those days, that was not possible. People were too practical and worked too hard to hand over their meager savings to a few young men with a risky venture. The young men could only think of one way to keep their dream alive, door-to-door sales. Yes, each and one would take their turn going door-to-door asking for money to invest in their motorcycles. I remember decades later talking to a woman from Menomoy Falls, Wisconsin, who recalled such a sales call. When I was a young girl, there was a knock on our front door. I remember my father opening the door, and here was this young man asking if he could explain his dream of making motorcycles. He was very young, and my father listened to his plea for money to support his venture. Then my father laughed, slammed the door in his face, saying, "Stop your foolish dreams and get a real job. Don't you know life is based on hard work? Time should not be wasted on dreams." My father lived to see this young entrepreneur achieve his dream. He would retell this story many times through the years, wanting me to learn a valuable lesson of how I should always listen to people's ideas and not be so quick to jump to conclusions. Well, each month, more and more motorcycles rolled out the shed door, but by July 1904, the little motorcycle manufacturing company had... Let me shift here. Outgrown the tiny shed in its addition. More space was needed. What could they do? They definitely did not have enough money to build a true factory. How could they let their dream die now when there was such a demand for their product? Well, just when things seemed hopeless, help arrived from a surprising source. The Davison boys had a hermit uncle named James McLay, who came to their rescue. James was their mother's uncle, an 80-year-old bachelor who lived in a reclusive life in Madison on the now famous Picnic Point of Lake, Mendota. He had built himself a small cabin and enjoyed living alone, cut off from the world around him. He spent his time raising bees and living off the land. He cut out a slot in his front door for the barrel of his gun. Spreading grain on the path leading to his door, he would have been ready when a squirrel or rabbit or deer came to eat. He was a Scot, however, and never forgot his family ties, keeping in touch by writing letters on the back of old calendars. Admiring people who had followed their own dreams, he was always interested in the escapades of his young nephews and their crazy machine. Upon hearing of their financial dilemma, he decided to help them out by loaning them every penny of his life savings. Needless to say, you can imagine how excited the young Davidsons were to receive such a windfall. With this money from Uncle James McGay, they purchased land down the hill from their home to the adjacent to the railroad tracks. Today, the site still is the company's permanent home, although many additions and newer factory have been built through the years. Because of his contribution, James McLay was affectionately called Uncle Honey, or Honey Uncle. He was always honored and was paid back tenfold. It is said he came to the rescue because of his Scottish heritage and the importance of clans sticking together. My grandfather named his oldest son Gordon McLay, my father, after his Uncle James, and would often tell the story of how this hermit relative came to rescue when it was needed most. With the money from the Honey Uncle and the new orders coming in, the boys were anxious to erect a new building. And in 1906, they built their first building to what was then called Chestnut Street and soon renamed Juneau Avenue. The new factory measured 28 by 80 feet and seemed spacious in comparison to the old shed. Being new in the building of business, however, no one thought to survey the property lines. Sure enough, one day an agent for the railroad came and told them their new building was impinging on railroad property. Instead of calling the lawyers like he would do today, my grandfather consulted the handful of employees. They all gathered the outside, solved the problem in the most logical way. Together, they picked up the wood building, moved it a foot and a half off the railroad land, and went back to work, and everyone was happy. Is that a cool story or what?
It is a cool story.
These are real stories about real enterprises, and Jean Davison is just a wonderful, wonderful woman, and wonderful book. If you want more about, to know, it's by Jean Davis called Growing Up Harley Davison. You can find it probably on Amazon if it's still available. And it's just a whole bunch of collection of her stories, pictures of the individuals and the bikes. And she would always say, "Don't ask me anything about the specs or sizes or anything. I always wanted a pony, but I got a motorcycle instead."
There you go.
But let's talk about the people. Yep. And I'm always intrigued about the people. Oh, think about Harold LeMay. What an individual to collect all that. Those cars.
I know. I can't believe it.
I think it's kind of insane myself.
There has to be a little bit of crazy there, but
yeah.
You know,
if it
wasn't for people that had those crazy ideas, some of the wonders we look at there wouldn't be there.
Well, and isn't that way most auctions are now set up, as a lot of these come out of private collections of people that have collected cars?
Yeah, that's where most of them come from. There's very few builders that build to sell. The profit's not there.
No. So. The profits come from older cars that are collectibles, are they not?
Yep, that's it. The ones that were built a long time ago and still withstood the stands of time.
Well, and you think about it, the ones that I've seen on the flip shows where they find an old junker, fix it up, and sell it, they typically choose the Firebirds, Transams, Camaros, Mustangs.
Mid-60s.
Mid-60s, early 70s.
They're easier to turn. You get into the 40s and 30s.
They're not so easy.
Yeah, the generation's not there anymore that's looking for those cars. People that are buying cars now are the ones that fell in love with it when they were teenagers. Or young kids, that's my generation.
That's exactly right. And speaking of which, there is a 1965 Shelby 427 Competition Cobra going on sale on March 9th at RM Sotheby's auction. And it was the 427 Competition Cobra, was built by Chevy for the FI Racing. But due to complications, it got set back. And because of that, they never really got the value that it was deserved. So we'll be right back with more of the show, and so stick with us. We'll be right back.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old-school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
Hang on till right after these messages.
Hey y'all, I'm Blake Shelton. I love that country music connects people all over this great nation, but unfortunately so does something else, childhood hunger. 15 million children struggle with hunger in America. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks works to rescue our surplus food to help provide billions of meals to families in need across the country. Join the fight against hunger at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
This is Donnie Smith. You've been listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Enjoy yourself.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Help us if you can, you're an El Camino, El Camino man.
Welcome back to the fifth and final segment of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And by the way, if you listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Podomatic, please like us and share us with all your friends. Go in there and say something nice about us. The more you do that, the better ranking we get up the slow climb to the to
the top of the
at least the top 500 or whatever.
Yes.
On Podomatic, we always reach number one, but I think it's a small outfit as compared to iTunes.
Yes.
And you know, it's interesting with iTunes, they even run Click and Clack is still on there. Those guys have been dead for years.
Yeah, well.
And, but it's,
reruns.
That's right. We all watched the Munsters, right, when we were kids?
That's it.
Golly.
It's stuck in time now. Oh, I spent this weekend at Harley-Davidson doing a chili cook-off.
I saw that.
Yeah, I took first place in the business class. I'm the only mechanic shop. I beat out all the restaurants.
Wow, no kidding.
Yeah, took third overall. Had a good time, though. It was real fun.
That is phenomenal.
Yeah, served 3.5 gallons of chili.
Oh, man. I was hoping you'd bring some by tonight.
Yeah, now maybe next time.
Oh, gee. Well, congratulations.
Yes, thank you very much.
And now where'd you post your award? At the office, at the shop?
Yeah, it's hanging on the wall at the shop in the kitchen.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Well, speaking of awards, big news for Brady, and he'll talk more about it next week, but he has been nominated as chairman of the very first ever Seafair car show to be put on during the 2019 hydroplane races Saturday, August 3rd. And more details will be coming.
I hear a leak that there will be a special judge.
Oh, yes. Maybe there's some special two judges. I don't know. We'll do some. I'll have to be manning the booth at this thing, and it better be in a prime spot, right down in the center of this event. Who knows? Maybe Chip Hanauer will come by and I can interview him. Oh, Wouldn't that be cool?
I introduced him. I race our C car boats with him.
I would love to meet him.
Oh yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah, and he's not a young guy anymore.
No, he's getting up there in years.
Yes, he is. Yeah, he is.
But yeah, he's fun.
Probably half deaf too because of running those.
No, not really.
Not like you?
No, not like me.
He must have wore good ear protection.
Yep.
Well, normally at this time, Brady, the wizard of trivia, tells you what the answer was for last week's trivia question and what this week's new trivia question is, and we do not have that information, so it's under lock and key.
We're going to make you hold on to it.
That's right. So we'll hang on.
Another week to answer last week's.
That's right. But the weather has been nice around here. There's no – it hasn't snowed. There's still – massive piles
of ice
and snow
yes.
Everywhere. I mean, I come up to my yard and it's still big stacks of it where we shoveled it. Yes, and
solid as a rock.
And on the side of the street, it's all sand induced, and it looks like, God, look at that big piles of dirt. Yep. Oh no, that's very hard
ice.
Ice encrusted, sand encrusted ice. Any other big projects or any events that you know of that's coming up?
Oh, well, it's just the start of the season, so all the Seattle Roadster Show will be here probably, I believe it's next month, at the Puyallup Fairgrounds.
Very good.
And then we have the spring opener swap meet out in Monroe, and I do not know the date of that exactly, but that's right around the corner as well.
I know with the swap meets. I know now online you can get a lot of this stuff, but swap meets tends to be a great place where people have old dealer brochures and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I find all kinds of good stuff at swap meets.
Yep.
The parts you may need, the parts you don't need, the parts you're going to buy anyway.
Just old radios that match your car from
yep,
that era.
Exactly.
Yeah. So swap meets are always fun. You can just go down there and hang out, even if you don't buy anything.
Oh, it's always good to meet, connections to find stuff later on.
And especially where you're at.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the more people I know, the easier my job is. Oh. I've been looking for international parts all week. Wow. It's not exactly easy to find some of that stuff.
International? No, there's not. Well, this is Steve Johann for Brady Wright and Shane Osborne, and I just want to say thanks for joining us again. Thanks for Eric LeMay joining us. Keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and your foot on the floor. Slide on next week for another edition of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Bye.
Bye.